Ellington versus Eclipse Recreational Vehicles. I guess we'll start with Eclipse, who has 7 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
I may please the court. My name is Artem Bagdishin, and I represent Appellant Eclipse Recreational Vehicles, Inc. The issue on this appeal is relatively straightforward, and that's whether the district court erred in distinguishing this case from Felicilda. In fact, it appeared that the district court agreed that Felicilda would resolve the arbitration issue in favor of Eclipse, but it distinguished the case on two grounds. First, that the dealership was not is not a party in this case. And second, that Ellington's claims are based on implied warranties versus express warranties as they were in Felicilda. But none of those differences require a ruling different than in Felicilda. And Eclipse, as well as Lippert, win under Felicilda on this issue.
Is your argument any different than Lippert's?
Well, it is, Your Honor. Thank you for the question. It's different in the sense that Eclipse, as the manufacturer, is actually referenced in the agreement. It is the manufacturer of the product that was purchased. And as well, Your Honor, under Civil Code 1792, which is part of the Song-Beverly Act, there's an express provision allowing for indemnity against the manufacturer by the selling dealership. And so if you want to look at the resulting transaction language in the arbitration clause or other parts of it, the manufacturer is included and is anticipated in this discussion.
Help me out with the arbitration clause. Tell me where the manufacturer is referred to.
The manufacturer, Your Honor, is part of the third party's language that was addressed by the fellow.
Okay, but not as part of the you or your. Agree?
Not as part of the you or we, but it is, Your Honor, the scope of the arbitration clause, which, by the way, is identical to the clause that was.
No, I agree. I'm not trying to figure out it's legal. You stopped me for a second when you said the manufacturer was expressly referred to. I don't see an express reference to the manufacturer in this arbitration clause. He may fall within a category of third parties, but there's no express reference to him, is there?
That's correct, Your Honor, and I apologize if I was unclear. What I was referring to was the purchase contract itself. Eclipse is listed as the a make and model for this product, for this RV.
Right, but the arbitration clause doesn't, because it would make a big difference to me if an arbitration clause expressly named someone. And that's why when you said it, I went back to look at the clause, and you agree you're not expressly named.
Not expressly named, Your Honor, but again, the breadth of the arbitration clause providing for any and all claims arising from the condition of the vehicle, as well as any third parties who are not signatories to a contract, is what was sufficient for Felicilda to go the way it did and is what was required for the district court to rule in our favor.
Okay, can I go back to that? And again, I know you want to focus on the claim part of the clause, but just so that I understand, because there is no claim that your client is an employee, agent, successor, or a sign of the signatories, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. But
okay. No, I understand your argument is that we should view that language expansively in light of the breadth of the claim provision. But in some other cases, there might be an argument that you're an affiliate or an assign. You're not making that argument.
Well, Your Honor, as the previous case before us, affiliate and assign are specific terms of art and they're specific legal terms, and the manufacturer is neither of those in this.
Right, and an affiliate is not in this contract as I read it, right?
It is not, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
But again, the question here, and I heard Ms. Bennett, I think, in the previous case, mentioning that this case is somewhat of an outlier. I think that's incorrect, Your Honor, and I don't think that's the right way of looking at the Felicilda versus FCA case. the right way to look at this case is that it is one of the, I believe, first cases that since Kramer have looked at this identical arbitration clause in the context of equitable estoppel and said, look, when you buy a car or an RV and you make claims about its condition, regardless of the warranty, whether it's expressed or implied, the crux of your claim is that the product you purchased is either defective or doesn't or is not in a good condition. And so if Kramer had there's a lot of reliance on Kramer by Ellington in this case and has been down below, but had Kramer, had Felicilda been the case when Kramer was being decided, it may as very well have been decided differently, because federal cases, federal courts look at the California law, and under California law, which addresses this specific issue and extends the doctrine of equitable estoppel in this specific context, it has to be followed. And absence of the dealership doesn't, we think the absence of the dealership doesn't resolve the issue in the plaintiff's favor. First, because the plaintiff is the party that chooses whom to sue. And going back to Civil Code 1792, which brings in the manufacturer as a party that has to indemnify the dealership, there's no practical reason for a plaintiff not to sue the dealership other than to avoid the arbitration clause, which, again, in the equitable...
Can I ask you a different question on this?
Yes, John.
You're not claiming third-party beneficiary in these cases, right? This case.
Eclipse is not, Your Honor.
Right. The only argument was equitable estoppel.
That's right. Under Felicilda.
Under Felicilda. Do the claims against your client, how are they so bound up in the purchase agreement? Aren't the warranties something quite separate from the purchase agreement?
Your Honor, my time is almost up, but I'll answer your question. The claims are bound up because, first, they relate to the condition of the vehicle, and the district court agreed with that. They arise from the condition of the vehicle, and the arbitration clause expressly allows or requires for claims arising out of the condition of the vehicle, even against third parties like the manufacturer, to be resolved in arbitration. And also, Your Honor, whether it's an implied warranty or an express warranty, claims under Song-Beverly require standing. And there's at least one California Superior Court case since Felicilda that held that without a purchase contract, you simply don't have standing under Song-Beverly because you're not a consumer of goods. And the purchase contract also sets the purchase date, which then controls when the warranty kicks in for the manufacturer, whether it's, you know, express warranty or things like that.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And yes, Mr. Maley.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. May it please the court. My name is John Maley, counsel for Lippert Components, who's a co-defendant in this case and co-appellant with the RV manufacturer, Eclipse. We join in Eclipse counsel's arguments. And in my brief time, I'll add just a few additional moments. I'm going to reserve 3 months for rebuttal. First of all, picking up where counsel just left off on the Song-Beverly Act, you know, that is the basis of the warranty claims in Felicilda and in this case. The Felicilda court stated, quote, that the agreement to the sales contract constituted express consent to arbitrate their claims regarding vehicle condition, even against third parties.
Let me ask you this, assuming hypothetically that Felicilda is distinguishable. Without that case, is there any other basis on which you can win this appeal?
Judge, no, we are not advocating third-party beneficiary, and the Felicilda case is the basis for our motion to compel arbitration, and other courts have followed Felicilda. It is not respectfully an outlier It is instead a case.
I understand you're writing that case pretty heavily, but I guess my question, and let me try to clean it up a bit, is if we don't agree with you that that case carries the day, can you win this appeal?
No, Your Honor, I don't think that we could, because we would have to, there's a background, of course, of Arthur Anderson and other precedent, and of course the general policies favoring arbitration, so that we're not dealt with nationwide putative class actions in federal court, as we are in this case. But Felicilda is the law of the state.
Let me ask Judge Parker's question differently. Let's assume Felicilda had never been decided. What's your best argument for equitable estoppel under other California law?
We would be advocating for an expansion or modification of California law then under this provision, which is now common, and we see this in multiple cases in California. This has now become a common form agreement used across the auto industry and the RV industry. And so we would essentially be the first plaintiffs making that position
But I'm sort of asking if you would be arguing for an expansion, but for Felicilda, you'd be arguing for an expansion of California equitable estoppel law, correct?
Yes, and applying it to this new provision.
How would you expand it?
That it covers in this new provision, in this new setting, that's the condition of the vehicle and the fairness that is in play. And this court, in just this summer, in the Franklin Community Real Medical Center, applied an arbitration provision to a person who was employed by a staffing agency who then worked at a medical center. And the court said that the key here is it prevents a party from playing fast and loose with its commitment to arbitrate, arguing it when it's advantageous, and circumventing it to gain undue advantage.
Who did anything like that in this case?
The plaintiff knew of the arbitration agreement. That's in the record. Counsel knew of it, and they selectively chose to draft this through the third amended complaint when they joined our client. They rely on the sale. They rely on Song Beverly and warranties, but they tried to and excluded the dealer, just as happened in Felicilda when the plaintiff dismissed the dealer when the issue arose and it was on appeal.
Does the record in this case let us know who drafted this agreement?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
We surely know the plaintiff didn't.
A fair assumption just from common sense industry. Yeah,
I mean, she would say, right. They were handed an agreement and said, sign this.
I mean, no, there's no assertion that it's unenforceable or unconscionable.
It's perfectly enforceable. We're trying to figure out what it says. Yeah. And I guess I'm echoing Judge Parker's question from earlier on. If it seems to me logical to assume that these agreements were drafted by people in the industry who surely could have said, you includes manufacturers and you includes whoever you want you to include, and it doesn't. And I'm trying to figure out whether I draw any inference from that or not.
You're respectfully, no, Your Honor, because we're not advancing, one, a direct contract, two, a third-party beneficiary contract, right, where you might look for...
I know you're arguing equitable estoppel.
Equitable estoppel, which the U.S. Supreme Court and the California state courts and this court have uniformly recognized is a viable, strong body of law.
Explain to me how you believe that Ellington is trying to extract the benefits of his contract and at the same time avoid a arbitration provision that's contained in the contract, because that's the kind of thing we usually look at when we're thinking about equitable estoppel.
Absolutely, Your Honor, and I'll direct you back to this court's decision in May of 21 in Franklin, which is in our briefing, 998 Bed 3rd 867, where this court, in enforcing through equitable estoppel an arbitration provision, said where a party to an arbitration agreement attempts to avoid that agreement by suing a related party with which it has no arbitration agreement in the hope that the claim against the other party will be adjudicated first, and have preclusive effect in their preparation, such a mover should not be allowed to succeed. That is this court's precedent from this summer.
I don't understand how that applies to the supplier of component parts.
In the supply chain, Your Honor, everything, of course, comes up through to the manufacturer. And so there's no distinction been drawn historically in equitable estoppel as we go down the supply chain, because what the Federal Arbitration Act and the Supreme Court and this court and California courts are concerned about is let's have one matter one time and not, in a relatively simple, straightforward individual arbitration claim and not a nationwide putative class action, which is what my client here in Indiana is now faced with out of what should be a simple five-figure one individual claimant claim. Your Honor, lastly, as I close out, just would remind the court of one of the errors of the trial judge in this, although the judge acknowledged we had a strong position and acknowledged Felicilda, did not take account of the strong provisions and policies under the Federal Arbitration Act that this court has followed and the Supreme Court and Moses Cohen has followed, that we have a healthy regard for the federal policy favoring arbitration, and that we err on the side of including rather than excluding arbitration.
Yeah, but those principles all apply to parties to arbitration agreements. They don't apply to third parties who might be who had never agreed to arbitrate, getting brought into arbitration proceedings.
Respectfully,
I mean, we don't gainsay the existence of the strong federal policy, but that's not what these cases involve. These cases involve, because the bedrock of arbitration is, you and I agreed to arbitration, and this case is, a step removed. These cases are a step removed from that, aren't they?
There's no strong federal policy in favor of recognizing equitable estoppel. What the cases say is you're entitled to whatever equitable estoppel the state gives you, right?
Yes, and that there's a strong policy favoring.
I can't find a single case that says.
And in the same way with third party beneficiaries, there's no strong federal policy around third party beneficiaries either, is there?
Not arguing there is, Your Honor, but I'll just close with California through Felicilda, which the Supreme Court denied review of, and which plaintiffs and the bar tried to get depublished, and the court refused to depublish the decision, is the law of the state of California in this contract, which is the same contract in this case. Respectfully ask that the court reverse the decision below and enforce the through equitable estoppel.
Right. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Mr. Robinson?
Yes, good morning, Your Honor. Jeremy Robinson appearing on behalf of the plaintiff and appellee Ty Ellington here. I have the good fortune, I think, of having Ms. Bennett make a lot of the arguments for me already, and probably a lot better than I ever could have. So I don't want to take a lot of the court's time on things that have already been said. But there are a few specific points I would like to make that pertain to this particular case. First off, I think it was perhaps telling that a couple of the questions for Lippert's counsel he found very difficult to answer. The first being, what is it that the plaintiff is taking advantage of in this contract that they should be equitably estopped?
Except I don't, I want to be fair to your opponent, who I thought did a great job trying to answer difficult questions.
Of course.
We don't require, if California were like the rest of the country, we'd look at somebody trying to take advantage of something to the detriment of somebody else. But the California law on equitable estoppel, which I don't pretend to understand, seems to focus on whether or not the claim in the lawsuit is bound up in matters covered by the arbitration agreement. And so it doesn't seem to focus to me on one party trying to take advantage of another. It seems to focus on some other criteria. Am I misreading the California arbitration equitable estoppel cases?
No, I think that's correct. Perhaps take advantage of is not the best choice of language there. But the standard is that even under California law, under Goldman and all of the other equitable estoppel cases, that the plaintiff is seeking to use the contract to create rights or to its benefits while at the same time trying to avoid the arbitration clause. That's the foundation for equitable estoppel.
Well, that's the general foundation of equitable estoppel. But the California cases that define it as the claims being bound up in the arbitration clause are a little different. So to tell me why these claims that your client brings aren't bound up somehow in the agreement that gave rise to the arbitration clause. How do I get out of that box?
Sure. Well, first of all, there's a variety of claims that have been brought in this case. I know the defendant has focused just on the Song Beverly claim, but this case includes claims under California's unfair competition law, under California's Consumer Legal Remedies Act, and implied warranties, which have nothing to do with the contract. And there's law out there that says...
Well, wait just a minute. Aren't the manufacturers... implied warranties implied in the contract between the purchaser and the dealer?
Your Honor, I don't believe they're implied in that contract. They're implied.
I thought under the UCC, implied warranties of merchantability and fitness for a particular purpose, are implied in every sales contract. Am I mistaken on that?
I don't think you're mistaken, but this case isn't arising under the UCC. There's California law such as Greenman and several other cases that say that implied warranties also arise independently of the contract, just by operation of law.
And the law in nearly every place in the I don't know whether California is an exception, but that is a common source of implied warranties. So we agree that there are implied warranties. Would you dispute that these implied warranties carry over to the contract between the purchaser and the car dealer?
If I'm understanding the question correctly, I would say that the implied warranties are independent of the contract. As this court said in Kramer...
Where are they implied into if it's not the contract?
They're implied by operation of law.
Into what?
Just into the relationship between the dealership and the plaintiff. If the plaintiff, as was in Kramer, at least the Kramer court, discussed, if the Ty Ellington went here and he just paid cash, there was no contract, he just said... Here's a wad of bills for this RV. Those implied warranties would still be there. It's not the contract that gives rise to those implied warranties. It's the transaction itself. And again, it's
just a sale. They go along with the sale, right?
Well, the sale is obviously a predicate for them. Yeah, the sale is a prerequisite for the implied warranties to exist. But again, this court has explained in Kramer and in several other cases, also in Murphy, it's not simply enough for equitable estoppel to say that there's a sale. If that was the case, then equitable estoppel would apply to every practical transaction out there. What is required under California law is that the claims arise or are intertwined or founded within the contract. And, I cite to Kramer again for an analogous case where this court looked at a very similar contract and said that there was no equitable estoppel, that it was identical or nearly identical consumer protection claims against an automobile manufacturer. And this court found that there was no equitable estoppel. And I think as my colleague or opponent mentioned, the only grounds they have to contest that at this point is Felicilda. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I believe he essentially conceded that absent Felicilda, they would lose this case.
I have a question about, does this whole thing turn on the allegations of the complaint? Because the Felicilda's complaint alleged and relied upon the express warranties that accompanied the sale of the vehicle to them by which FCA undertook to preserve and maintain the utility or performance of their vehicle. And the Court of Appeal said that this sales contract was the source of the warranties at the heart of the case. Now, are your case is different because it's only implied warranties as opposed to express warranties in the sales contract?
That is a difference between the cases, but it's not the only one. I do agree in Felicilda, they said the warranties were provided as a part of the contract. And the claims, you know, our claim for unfair competition under 17200, for the Consumer Legal Remedies Act, for against Lippert in particular, the product liability design defect claims we have, those don't relate to the contract, other than obviously the contract is evidence that there was a sale. And a sale is not even a prerequisite for a UCL claim, but it is a prerequisite for a few of the other claims. But the other key distinction, which I think has been discussed at some length already, is the fact that in Felicilda, the dealership is the one that compelled arbitration. And so what happened in that case, when the dealer compels arbitration, because they are the we or of you and we, and the clause, the breadth of the scope of the clause says it can encompass potentially claims against that relate to the condition of the vehicle or that involve third parties, the dealership's compelling arbitration brings all of those claims within the scope of the contract itself. So although the...
But that gets back to the point that your colleague, Mr. Maley, raised. If you had raised these claims against the dealership and it had compelled arbitration, do you agree that the other two parties could have been joined in that arbitration?
Probably so. I mean, I think
so, yeah. So what he's saying is, look, you made a strategic decision to circumvent the arbitration clause to end up in a situation where by not suing an obviously responsible party to stay out of the arbitration clause, and that you ought to be equitably stopped from doing that, is what he's saying. Now, maybe he made the argument better than I rephrased it, but assuming that's the argument he's making, why is he wrong?
I understand the argument he's making. That's the spin that he's putting on it, obviously, but we didn't sue the dealership not because we were trying to avoid arbitration. The dealership, the defect in this case is a latent frame defect where the frame cracks over a period of time of usage. There's no evidence that the dealership had any knowledge of this defect at the time of sale or would have any...
It's true in products liability cases. The last person in the line gets stuck for warranties about what they sold, even though they're not at fault.
That's possibly true, but I mean, again, I think you have to return to the terms of the contract. The contract is written in a way that says the dealership has the power to compel arbitration, and there's a fairly broad scope. And I think, as you all have discussed with some of the other counsel, if the manufacturer wanted to be a part of that arbitration, or, you know, the dealership could have written them in, or whoever wrote the contract. We don't know who wrote the contract. I think it's just like a standard form contract that's used throughout the state. But they whoever drafted the contract, not the plaintiff, could easily have said the manufacturer has the power to compel arbitration here. They chose not to do that. So we look to the literal terms of the contract for determining what's going to happen under those circumstances. And this is why I think, as Ms. Bennett said, Felicilda really isn't an equitable estoppel case. They never had to get to equitable estoppel. They just found that the dealership's compelling arbitration had the ability to bring that claim within the scope of the arbitration clause. And that's not the case here. And so...
Here's what's going on. The dealership... I'm sorry, the manufacturer does not want to be tied into arbitration clauses in retail auto contract cases, because that would mean that every time a dealer screws up or improperly repairs a a vehicle, the manufacturer who has, you know, thousands of dealerships around the country can get dragged into it. So they don't want that. But to follow up on Judge Hurwitz's question, it seems to me that the main responsibility for, you know, repairing a defective vehicle is with the dealer that you bought it from. I mean, that's how this happened. That's how these problems are resolved, you know, 99% of the time. And you avoided the very obvious defendant and instead went after the manufacturer who didn't have an arbitration clause. So why shouldn't that concern us?
Well, first off, I agree with the first part of your colloquy there about why the manufacturers may not want to be in there, but that's a choice that they're making. And if they make that choice, then they have to live with that choice, which also means they don't get to take advantage of the contractual language that's in there. On the second part, this relates to the terms of the contract. And again, you know, the contract could be worded in a different way, but it's not equitable estoppel, which is what's being argued here, doesn't look to who the plaintiff has decided to sue. It looks to the question of whether the claims are bound up with the contract in a way that they can't be separated and that the plaintiff should be stopped from avoiding the arbitration clause. They're trying to take advantage of some obligation created by the contract while at the same time avoiding some other part of that contract.
We're not. But aren't these claims, the claims you are making against the manufacturer, tied up with the dispute you've got with the dealer? I mean, aren't they one and they're just the same package? You bought a product that didn't work like it was supposed to.
As I mentioned earlier, as discussed in this court's decision in Kramer, it's not tied up with the contract. It's tied up with the purchase of the vehicle. And there's ample case law out there, Murphy, Kramer, and California cases that say just because there's a sale, that's not enough for equitable estoppel. It has to be tied up within the contract itself.
And it's tied pretty close to the contract because either embedded in the contract or side by side with the contract or implied warranties of merchantability and fitness.
That may be true, but that's only a very small part of this case. There are many claims having nothing to do with implied warranties. I mean, as I mentioned, implied warranties can exist independent of the contract, but we have a lot of claims that aren't implied warranty claims. And again, that would exist even if Ellington had paid cash or if they...
Well, the broadest claims you've got are the implied warranty claims on that. You're saying this was not merchantable and was not fit for a particular purpose. You can't have claims broader than that.
I don't know if I would agree with that. I think our unfair competition law claim in California law, that is a hugely expansive claim that you can make. But I'm not sure if the breadth necessarily matters. I mean, I think I see I'm running low on time. So one point I want to try to make here is that the rule that I think they're trying to advocate for, and they have never actually come out and said this, but they seem to be saying in their briefs that any claim that is involving a third party and relates to the condition of the vehicle is now subject to arbitration under Felicilda. And I don't agree with that, obviously, based on the interpretation of Felicilda, but that would be just a massive expansion of equitable estoppel law. As Ms. Bennett pointed out, that would mean that a drunk driver could now compel arbitration because they're a third party and the crash might have related to the condition of the vehicle. There's no reasonable rule that you can fashion from that would be applicable to all of these circumstances. And Felicilda simply cannot be a case that holds that's the way equitable estoppel works. So I've run over my time. I apologize. I'll answer any questions, but otherwise I'll stop.
Does anybody have any questions?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Thank you. Very interesting series of cases. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Your Honor, Yes, I hope I still have at least a few seconds left for rebuttal, briefly.
Overtime, Your Honor.
Pardon me?
It's overtime.
I know he is.
Thank you, Your Honor.
No, I'll give you a minute.
Oh, thank you very much. Very briefly, Your Honors, two things. Counsel just told the court that Felicilda is not an equitable estoppel case. The term appears multiple times in the case. The analysis is of all the California equitable estoppel cases. Secondly, I'll direct the court back to the Franklin decision from this court this summer, 998 Fed 3rd 867, in our reply brief. Felicilda is the law of the state of California. Here's what this court said this summer. When the California Supreme Court has not spoken on an issue, we are obligated to follow the decisions of the state's intermediate appellate courts unless there's convincing evidence the California Supreme Court cite different cites decisions, including an en banc decision, and then says this is especially true when the Supreme Court has refused to review the lower court's decision. That's where we are. Felicilda is the law of this case. It's why we're here. And respectfully, the attempt to bring a nationwide fugitive class action in a case that is bound by equitable estoppel arbitration provision should be reversed for compelling arbitration on that claim. Thank you, Your Honors, for your generous time today.
Thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ellington versus Eclipse Recreational Vehicles and Libert Components is submitted, and this session of the court is adjourned for today. Thank you.
This court for this session stands adjourned.